Hey, podcast listeners. Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/adfreenews. That's amazon.com/adfreenews to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll take a deep dive into the new Google Pixel devices and ask if the Google Pixel 9 is the best phone on the market. We'll chat with Refurbed about the secondhand market in Ireland, and as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so at any stage. Email techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Later in the show, we're going to take a look at Elon Musk's robo-taxi and his vision for humanoid robots in the home. But let's start with Google Pixel, and I'm delighted to say that John Riley of TheEffect.net is with me once again. John, how are you?
Great, Jess. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's been a while since you have been on, and I think one of the last times we spoke, we were previewing the new Google devices. They were on their way to us, and we had both said that we were super excited to try them out. It's been a few weeks now, and I can tell you that I am officially out of the world of Apple. I'm no longer an iPhone user. I'm no longer an Apple Watch user. That's as big a testimony, I suppose, as I could give to the new Google devices. What have you made of them?
I've never really been an iPhone iOS device user myself, but I've always been an Android person. And so I was always eagerly awaiting these new Pixel devices. And I think, as you said, the last time we were chatting, we mainly covered like the main, not the main handsets. So there was like three main handsets that they were bringing to the market. And I'd previously been using the Pixel 8 Pro. So I was really excited for this new Pixel 9 Pro, the XL model, which is basically kind of somewhat trying to replicate Apple's offerings and having a more general, smaller, for want of a better term, device, and then these XL or Max models that Apple and Pixel have gone with, or Google have gone with, for the larger screened phones that people are getting more and more used to. So yeah, I've shipped it on up to the Pixel 9 Pro XL, which is actually just the same size as last year's 8 Pro, but the moniker then gives the ability to go with just a Pixel 9 Pro, which is like a smaller version of the XL model, but has all the bells and whistles. So they've been crying out, or a lot of the tech enthusiasts or the tech landscape have been crying out for a phone that does it all, as big as a brick, basically. Yeah. So you've got both options there. And then really just the entry-level Pixel 9 is for the people that really aren't that bothered with having the cutting-edge tech, but a phone that is more than really for most people.
Yeah, so the lineup is incredibly impressive. As you said, they're trying to cater to everybody. We also have the foldable phone, which we'll talk about in a quick second. But let's focus on the three main Pixel devices themselves. Because one of the big selling points of these phones, as indeed with the new Apple phone, is the AI and the capability and the power inside of them. So you've mentioned that you're using the Pro XL. Talk us through what makes this one different from the previous iteration.
Yeah, so really with the XL model, it's all in on Gemini, which is basically, if your listeners are aware, is Google's kind of offering or consumer-focused offering for AI implementation across their devices. So this is kind of somewhat trying to somewhat to replace Google's Assistant, which everyone would be aware of. I'm afraid now to say it too loudly because I have enough of those speakers lying around the house here. But the Gemini is being built in kind of from the ground up for this device. They've got the new Tensor G4 processor, and it's got a hell of a lot of more RAM, especially these Pro models of 16 gigabytes of RAM, which is probably more than most people's laptops. Probably definitely more than most people's laptops. So it's an obnoxious amount of RAM that really helps to keep things sailing along in the background quite smoothly. And then, and as I mentioned, is kind of implemented across the phone. It can be used to help summarize voice recordings. You can go in and manipulate images even more aggressively and kind of tweak things around and change backgrounds completely. Use AI to generate things that aren't even there. That's a whole different kind of ethical kettle of fish. But yeah, I've been absolutely loving playing with it. They even have their kind of, what would you call it? their voice assistant on steroids. It's called Gemini Live, and it's kind of a step up where you can have this like very, very natural, free-flowing conversation with this Gemini assistant. You can select the voice and then away you go. And I've been doing it for the last number of weeks, and I'm kind of still taken aback by how impressive it is at just its speed and its kind of intuitiveness in terms of understanding what I'm trying to get from it, and just asking it questions about theology and food and culture and stuff that you wouldn't be able to really Google without going down infinite rabbit holes. So just being able to like literally talk to Google and have it kind of go off and do the homework for you and just come back to you pretty instantaneously with an answer, it's quite something, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, I always kind of come at these things with a bit of an arched eyebrow going, yes, it's cool, but how useful is it and how practical is it and how much am I actually going to use it? And like you, you know, I've been trying to play around with it and I've been trying to set its limitations. But I've also then, you know, in the last, say, 2 weeks, reached for it and used it because it works. The speech recognition is fantastic. The speed, as you alluded to, is great. And even small things, like when I am doing my interviews, and this is probably, I'm one of the few people in the country that would use this, but when I'm recording interviews, sometimes, and this is inside baseball, I need to revoice something. So that means to re-record my question. It could be that I was off mic or it wasn't recording or something like that. And so what I've started doing is using the recorder on my phone, so on the Google Pixel 9, and it's live transcribing both my end of the conversation and your end of the conversation. And the transcript is pretty flawless, so that when it comes to me revoicing my interview or whatever it needs to do, it is so easy in comparison to the way it was back in the day, which was you'd listen back and you'd transcribe it yourself. The accuracy has blown me away, more so than pretty much any other feature.
Yeah, no, I think, and they've actually been kind of leading that charge for quite a while now, but it's just been supercharged with the advances they've made in their kind of AI models. Like, they were kind of well known for the last two or three generations for their voice recorder and its kind of voice to speech or voice to text transcription capabilities, but now it's just another level. And to your point, you can not only just obviously get incredibly good or accurately transcribed recordings, you now can get summaries of those recordings to go, what did we cover in that interview, or, you know, what were the main points like. It'll divide the speakers up so you can kind of see as you look back who was speaking when. There'll be different color coded sections so you know who was speaking when. All that, I know it's a niche offering for want of a, you know, for a certain kind of demographic, but when it's used like people like you, when you're in the media industry and kind of interviews and at the drop of a hat, I can only imagine the incredible benefits it can bring, and just the speed and efficiency that it just adds to your kind of workflow.
Yeah, I think it for me has been a grounding in the day-to-day applications of this incredible AI that we're hearing so much about. Now, I know that there are ethical questions for businesses about the implementation and how and when and why they use it, but for me, the point that you just made there of summarizing a meeting, like, that will be, when businesses start to use this properly, I think it will be a game changer. And to have it in the back pocket of your jeans, ready to be deployed at the drop of a hat, it's proper innovation. And I suppose when Apple is going through its, I suppose, turbulent time of trying to figure out if and when its Apple Intelligence will launch in Europe, Google really does have an advantage here, doesn't it?
Yeah, they really were quick off the mark, or kind of had the groundwork put in that this is their own offering. We can see what Apple's implementation when it comes to their devices, you know, in America initially, and as you said, when it rolled out here in Ireland and Europe, that they're kind of being propped up for, you know, by ChatGPT's capabilities. So the fact that Google has its own smarts, is powering the device with their kind of AI-focused processors and just implementing it across all the kind of services most of your listeners will be using. If it's Gmail, if it's Google Docs, if it's YouTube even, you can pop it into this Gemini app and go summarize this video. And rather than spending 25 minutes watching a video, it'll grab all the content from the audio or the closed captions or the subtitles, and it'll just give you a little summary. So that is just the time and effort you're going to kind of save from these little kind of quality of life additions or kind of bonus additions to AI in your life is really something you can't ignore, to be honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The other thing, the Radio Awards were on last Friday, and if you follow me on Instagram, you'll have seen 10,000 photographs. But it was funny, on the night, I was taking the majority of the photos, and every single person that I took the photo for was like, oh my God, your camera is insane. And it wasn't because it was airbrushing the photographs, but it was capturing the light, it was capturing the colours, the detail. It is a level above even the previous phone that I was using, which was the 15 Pro Max, the iPhone 15 Pro Max. It's just in a league of its own, in my opinion, when it comes to cameras on smartphones that are just point and shoot. There's no there's no messing around with any settings or anything like that.
No, exactly. And again, they've been leading the charge for quite some time. I think initially, way back when it came on the scene, people were kind of wondering how Google were going to approach this and were they going to be just an incredibly search-focused device that wouldn't, and then the camera would just be an add-on. But they really kind of went, they doubled down from the very get-go with the cameras on their Pixel phones to say, we can really use our computational power and our AI smarts from the very beginning or the very first device to show what can be captured on a smartphone. And we're now, what are we, 9 generations in, basically. And these phones are capturing some of the best photos you can get on any smartphone. So credit is definitely due there. Like, as you said, the usability, the idiot-proofness of it, just pop it out of your phone. Even the fact that they just used the improved the front-facing camera on these Pro models, that the how wide that camera lens is. I don't know if you've noticed that when you're holding it out at arm's length, like, I don't think many other phones can get such a wide selfie, basically. And when I've shown people, they don't really, it's only when you put them side by side with maybe an iPhone device or maybe a more run-of-the-mill mid-tier device that you see what you're getting when you go for these top-tier devices. And again, just being able to capture the moment in all its breadth and whatever it may be, it really just shows why it's worth kind of going up to these upper levels. Because at the end of the day, the Pro and the Pro XL models, they have creeped up in price too. So you're looking at the Pro model is coming in at €1,119, and then you're jumping up to the XL, which is that bigger handset that I use. That's €1,219. That's not cheap at all. So you got to be really kind of willing to commit to that investment, but make sure you're going to get the benefit out of all those features we've been talking about.
Yeah, I think if you're someone like either of us, which are like, we are heavy users of our smartphones, there are offices, there are social outlets, and they're part of our everyday lives, I suppose, like in so many different scenarios. Like, the other thing is, I was over in York with my baby nephew the other day, and trying to get a photograph of a baby is near impossible, where it's not blurry or there's not hands floating around the place and all the rest. And what I loved about the Pixel was that not only could it offer me the best shot, but you could unblur an image, or like, there's so much that you can do. And again, you don't need to have a degree in photography to understand how to do it. So overall, I think it's safe to say we are big fans of the Pixel range. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about is the Pixel Watch. So I suppose the big reason I didn't move from iPhone sooner was because I've always preferred Android, but I loved my Apple Watch in terms of tracking my fitness, my running, all that kind of stuff. And the Pixel Watch 3 has really impressed me, but I do have a little gripe, because it wouldn't be like me not to. But it's the disparity, or my lack of understanding, I suppose, between the Google Fit app and the Google Watch app, and then there's the Fitbit app as well. So you've got kind of three centers for data, and I find myself having to go to all three to get the level of data that I basically need or want based on my running or whatever it might be. And I just wonder, how have you found the watch in terms of a productivity tool, so not having to take your phone out, but then also that fitness tracking element as well?
Well, I'd like to lie to your listeners and say I use it for fitness tracking, but that wouldn't be fair, because it really isn't something. I'm a fan of the Pixel Watch 3 because of they finally went to that 45mm, or just that larger screened display, or larger display, basically, that I can really read more text at once on the screen. When an email or something pops up on my phone, I can read more of it on my watch. And just the functionality of that alone, and just the quality of the screen, the brightness is really impressive. And then the kind of the speed is there, because it's got, it's just all working quite seamlessly in the background. But But to your point, I was using it, you know, just in terms of tracking steps and maybe kind of my sleep patterns. It was definitely something I got intrigued by and got something out of with the morning brief. You get that every morning, or watch will kind of pop up a little notification saying this is how you slept and this is your kind of your readiness score for taking on the day, and kind of take it easy today or kind of push a bit harder, which is what I usually always get for the day ahead. So those type of ways of reading your overall fitness levels and telling you what to do on that given day. Another quality of life, or just a kind of a benefit to the phone and the watch working together to understand you and your fitness levels. But I do agree that there is, you know, they're in that kind of teething problem stage of kind of they bought Fitbit a number of years ago. They're transitioning kind of their devices, the Fitbit devices, into Google's ecosystem. And then the watch then is a Pixel watch powered by Fitbit kind of fitness features. They have kind of come out to say they'll be no longer making those larger displayed fitness or Fitbit devices. I'm not sure exactly where the line will cut, if they'll just stick with the bands. So we're in this kind of awkward transitionary stage. And I do appreciate your annoyances with kind of having to jump into the Fitbit app, having to jump into Google Fit, and then the watch itself and its own settings and kind of tweaks and abilities to change your own features. So they really need to start to amalgamate that more to make it a bit more user-friendly.
Yeah, and I think that will come. But what is exciting for me is that, like, sometimes I'm a bit of a runner, and so I had gone down the route of having my Apple Watch and then wearing a Whoop. And what's really interesting is that readiness score that you mentioned there, that's a bit akin to what you get from the Whoop. So it does take in a lot of the data, and so rather than just having a Whoop that gives you that readiness score and your recovery and all the rest, to be able to get everything in the one place, I think if they do fine-tune the difference between those three apps and amalgamate them into one, it'll definitely be a bit of a game-changer. The other phone that we didn't talk about was, of course, the foldable phone. This is something that we didn't get last time round. I remember being on a briefing call with some Irish journalists last year, and we were all a little bit crestfallen to learn that the first foldable device wasn't coming to Ireland, but we do have one now. Have you played around with it, and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I was very eager for this kind of new device, this new Pixel folding device, to make its way to Ireland, because, as you said, last year it didn't get it. It was only a limited number of countries that it kind of initially launched in. So now we have the Pixel 9 Pro Fold. So it's all been, as I think we mentioned last time, they've all been launched at once, all under the same kind of 9 moniker or 9 number branding. And yeah, this is kind of the peak of what Google can do with folding technology. And they really have jumped up from what I've seen online, from what the quality and the kind of the engineering and the design choices of last year's model. Now we have the Pixel 9 Pro Fold, and it's leaps and bounds above what they gave customers last year. So it's a really good improvement. And yeah, the cameras are very, very, very impressive. But for me, someone that's a very, very avid photo taker and kind of wants to have the best possible technology in my pocket, there is just one or two too many discrepancies, or kind of what would you call them, tweaks to the Pixel 9 Pro Fold's camera that kind of make it slightly less efficient than the 9 Pro XL's. That's kind of convoluted. It's basically you're not getting all the bells and whistles on the folding device as you are on the standard Pro Fold phones, which is quite annoying. I guess, look at it, physics have a way of telling you how thin a device can go before you have to start to make compromises. So they could only fit so much into one half of a folding phone when it's open, in terms of camera tech. But still, as I said, most people if they do decide are picking this up for the enormous 8-inch display on the inside screen, which is a fantastic display for watching media, for viewing your photos back, for even just reading documents side by side. The productivity aspects, I've used loads, and I want to open two apps at once. It's basically like having two phones together at the same time, so you can really just very quickly check between documents, check between files, watch a video, then take notes on the left-hand side. All those type of things that kind of can only be done on a folding device is now something that Pixel Line offers Irish customers. But that coming in at €1,919, so there will be many a raised eyebrow at that price point, but it's quite on par with the likes of Samsung's offerings and even Honor's Magic V devices. So these aren't cheap. They're going to come down in price over time, I'd imagine. But right now, they're very, very expensive. But if you're going to use it for the productivity and you feel you need that big display for media, for Excel documents, whatever it may be, the Fold is a fantastic choice.
Yeah, I think that what they're trying to do, as I understand it, is cater to everybody. And, like, as much as I've loved using it, I wouldn't buy one. But I now wouldn't be without the Pixel 9 just because of what it offers me, the camera, the battery, the power, all the rest. But I think my key message anyway would be, if you're buying a Pixel device, you really can't go wrong.
Yeah, that's basically, they've honed it more and more. And I think across the software and even the hardware, because it's such a beautifully designed phone, similar again to almost on the nose of what the iPhones are in terms of design. You know, it's quite hard to tell them apart almost when you're holding them face on between a 16 Pro and a 9 Pro. But look at, if you can't beat, and the quality is there and the craftsmanship. So you're getting a premium made device, and then you've got the power of Google's AI, Gemini running underneath. And yeah, the camera that just people are pretty blown away by every time you take photos with. So yeah, you cannot go wrong with a Pixel device, no matter which way you look at it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, look, if you want to read more, you can head over to theeffect.net, where you will find John's reviews in full, as well as the latest news from the world of gaming. John will be back in a few weeks' time with some bits and pieces from the world of gaming. And who knows what else will crop up between now and then. But as always, John Riley, thanks so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks a million, Jess.